Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Good morning, Whitey.
Morning. How are you?
Going great.
That's good.
How could you not be?
I'd give you a few reasons.
No, you're all positive at the moment. You're 100% positive. 100%
yes.
You are.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
What a feeling about your energy level. You've seemed to be building towards something, just from what I'm watching.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but
no.
There seems to be a build going on.
It was interesting. A couple of interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
This weekend, Brisbane and North Melbourne play in Tassie.
Hobo.
And it will be two Tasmanian coaches who are coaching at the AFL level, coaching against each other in Tassie.
How many times has that happened?
I don't know. Well, I'm not sure it would have ever happened.
Right.
At AFL level. I don't know, but it would be rare. And Essendon plays in Tassie for the first time in 29 years for premiership points.
Yes.
When they take on Hawthorn in Tassie, but to the north of Tassie.
Playing in Tassie,
So while there are some really disappointing things happening at the moment in regards to coronavirus-based issues, so you get a fantastic game of basketball last night between two Melbourne teams and it's played in Sydney.
Yes.
And a team comes from 18 points down to win, and you'd think, you know, if it was played in Melbourne and it was a full house, can you imagine the atmosphere?
Yes.
My son's, we're still not sure whether he can play basketball on Friday night. We're not sure he can. He went to basketball training last night, and he's all excited about playing on Friday night, but we actually don't know whether he can.
Yes.
Community sport's being decimated, and I think it's being forgotten. I know Gareth was talking about it a lot yesterday, and I'm 100% with him. I think we're forgetting about the devastation that it's causing yet again in regional areas, but also in suburban areas as well. So there are some good things coming out of coronavirus because of these unique set of circumstances. It's still pretty frustrating.
That started sort of
positive. Am I on the radio? I'm just rattling on. It's talking to myself.
You took that on a journey.
I just forgot that
you
I was on the radio.
Took us on a journey because you started positive. Like it was all good, and then it became quite sad.
But isn't that life at the moment? Isn't that life? Like you sort of you do sort of just roller coaster along.
Well, yes, I think that's probably about right. We try and keep it a touch more positive here on the Breakfast Club.
I know, but you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
I thought you were going to be 100% positive. You're talking about the Tassies in Tassie and how good that would be for the people of Tassie and all that stuff. And then the world ended again, mate.
Well, that's me. That's my life at the moment. I'm really up and about 1 minute and the next minute I'm...
Well, you're okay. Well, I'll cheer you. How about I cheer you up?
You cheer me up.
Well, Brad Kennedy's going to join us.
Oh, that's good.
There's some news just coming through. Aussie Brad Kennedy's going to be getting ready for the week at Torrey Pines for the US Open. Just finished his final practice round. He's happy to tell us how the build-up is going. So that's great work by Frank out the back. So we'll have a chat to Brad. There's a fair few Aussies in the field. Half a dozen or so Aussies in the field, I think.
Maybe about five or six. Yeah. Six or seven in that range. Five to seven in the window. Brad Kennedy, we've spoken to Brad quite a few times in recent years. And he's got this great story about essentially retiring from golf and then all of a sudden having this unexpected success. And then as a result of that, all sorts of opportunities opening up for him. He would never have imagined 3 years ago that he'd be teeing it up in the US Open as he is this week. It is third golf major of the year. They compress them now. And I think it's being at Torrey Pines is a little bit more interesting in the sense that it is a point of the PGA Tour. It's played every year, so many people know Torrey Pines. It's a very famous golf course. It's where Tiger Woods had some pretty epic wins, some great finishes. Australians have won at Torrey Pines a few times. So it's got that famous last hole, the par five, where you got hit over the water.
Oh, yes.
He's always seen some dramatic finishes, so it's going to be good.
We love a bit of dramatic finishes in our world. Did you see... What was I going to say to you? Oh, you mentioned the basketball last night. What about that? Melbourne United through to the final to take on the Perth Wildcats after being down 18 points, as you rightly say. And it wasn't. It was 350 games for CG43 last night, the National Basketball League. It's a fantastic achievement by our man Chris. But it was the new breed that stood up. Jock Landale was the inspiration for Melbourne United last night because they looked all at sea, I must admit. Our man Simon Mitchell had coached his socks off to stifle the offense of Melbourne United. Then United and Dean Vickerman said, well, we've had a gutful of this. We're going to stop you. We're not going to try and score. We're just going to stop you scoring. And they really put the squeeze on. Big Jock was the main man for Melbourne United and paid for his wage last night, I reckon.
Yeah, I've talked to you about this before. I used to own a horse called Landale, and Landale was a good try most of the time. So every time Jock plays, I think of the horse and the amount of money it cost us. But, yeah, I mean, it's great to see the best players do well when it matters most. And, you know, he's been a star recruit for United, and for him to stand up like he did, as you said, with them down by so many, he scored 27 points and almost single-handedly got them back into the game. And, listening to Simon Mitchell after the match, he was absolutely gutted because it would have been a great turn-up if they were able to win. Having, you know, been against the odds to do it, they've had a real rollercoaster season, whereas United have been pretty much at the top for most of it. It was a great finish to a rivalry that continues to grow.
Yes, I mean, a magnificent game it was last night, and United are through to take on Perth. So we'll certainly build up to that series. The first two games that are in Perth, I think.
Yeah, Friday, Sunday. Might be Friday, Sunday.
I'm not quite sure where the Melbourne legs of the games are going to be, whether or not they'll be in Melbourne or Sydney or so. We'd like to think they could be in Melbourne. Because
yeah.
I was reading somewhere. What was I reading? Somewhere it was planned for 25%, 35%, 50%. Actually, that was the basketball. They're planning. The soccer. Soccer. Amy Park this weekend from Melbourne City. They're planning or submitting plans for 25%, 35%, and 50% at Amy Park for their clash in the A-League finals. So that's on Sunday.
But how could they have that situation there, but you can't have anyone in regional Victoria to Geelong and the Bulldogs on Friday night?
Well, that's on Friday. And there's a slither. Your mate Mark Stevens told me yesterday there was a slither of hope that might change.
And you've got a situation on Sunday that Hawthorn and Essendon wanted a crowd and they couldn't get one, so they've gone to Tassie.
Pulled the trigger early.
Maybe
they pulled the trigger early.
Maybe. So they met last night, the group.
The Boffins.
They met last night, and I think they're meeting again today with the potential that there would be some announcements later this afternoon on a number of different things, including sporting events. So, who knows? Fingers crossed. There will be a minimum of two cases when the number comes out around about 9 o'clock this morning, because they found those two in South Bank in an apartment block. So a Melrose Place type setup.
Is it Melrose Place?
Well, similar.
Is there a pool in the middle?
I'm not sure.
Because that's where Billy used to do a lot of his good work.
A lot of people fell into that pool, didn't they?
They did.
Chose to go into that pool.
Yeah. Well, Billy and Alison were often in there.
Were they?
They were frolicking. They would frolic, those two.
I think they were more frolicking in their apartment.
No, Adam, don't take it there. Tico, I'm trying to have breakfast. Frolicking in the pool there, frolicking. So well done to Melbourne United last night. I did read that Melbourne City are trying to petition for crowds this week at Amy Park. So we'll see what happens there. And as you say, we'll know more this afternoon or late this morning when the Boffins have their press conference. Overnight, there's been some activity in the world of international sport. The Socceroos have been in action in the World Cup qualifiers. They finished top of Group B with a 1-0 win over Jordan. 8 consecutive World Cup qualifier victories. Never done before by the Socceroos. Fair to say, we're in a purple patch.
And we're not in a group of death.
No groups of death just at the moment.
This is the Minnows series. The Asian Minnows before we start to ramp it up a bit.
Well, the passage is open to phase three. That's the end of phase two. Now we get to phase three of the World Cup qualification and the 2023 Asian Cup qualification. So that's good news. Graham Arnold's got this team going pretty well. We like what Graham's doing with this edition of the Socceroos. We don't know any of them, of course.
No, that's right. They
refuse to talk to us. But regardless, I'm cheering for them. I know that others out there perhaps aren't as invested, but I'm cheering for them. So well done to the Socceroos. And the Matildas played overnight as well, Whitey. We talked about their game against... Who did they play last week? It was the Scandinavian Swing. they played Sweden today. Was it Denmark last week? Might have been Denmark. So that nil-all draw was Sweden, who I think, if I wasn't mistaken, might have been fifth in the world, Sweden. We didn't play very well last week, but today must have played a bit better to get the nil-all draw against Sweden. It was Denmark last week, confirmation of that from Frankie at the back. And we've got Sweden, who are fifth in the world, and we're currently ranked ninth. So that's a solid performance by the girls overnight. So well done to them. Nil-all draw for the Matildas. 1-0 to the Socceroos over Jordan in the World Cup qualifier. Top of Group B, straight through to Phase 3 and moving forward. And there's European action today. Euro 2020 action going on as we speak. Overnight, Portugal were very, very hungry. The 3-0 against Hungary. And Cristiano Ronaldo got a piece of that action. He's 106th international goal. So the Twitter sphere was telling me a little bit earlier this morning. And currently, we've got one of the all-time great rivalries, France and Germany. That's good business.
Yeah.
Going on 1-0 to France, 63 minutes in to that clash. So that will be a busy half hour, the last half hour of that clash in the Euro 2020 soccer tournament across the globe at the moment.
I'm just trying to work out what the colour outfit the Queen wore at Royal Ascot.
Oh, yes.
I don't think she was there.
What?
Because she was meeting with
Scott
Morrison.
She was hanging out with Scotty. She was,
that's
too.
Right, in a yellow number. Was
well, it? Well, I don't know. I don't know what Her Majesty was wearing.
Yeah. So I don't think she was there.
That would... Surely she popped in to say good day and then took off.
Well,
it's tradition.
Scott would have got, we'd been happy to go to the races.
It's tradition.
Yeah.
And she's all about tradition. I know there's been some challenges in her world in the last little while.
Yeah, that was only... Well, this is how big Scott Morrison obviously is. She missed Royal Ascot's first day for just the second time in 69 years.
To meet Scotty?
It would appear so.
Well, I find that unacceptable.
The rest of the royal family were there, but the Queen wasn't.
Well, how are we going to...
Do you reckon she would have had the Walkman in the ear while she sat down for tea? Or do you reckon she was just... had the iPhone out, just glancing at the races while she was having afternoon tea with Scott? Or do you reckon she said, Scott, look, to be honest, I'd prefer to be somewhere else and just put it on the big screen. What do you think would happen in that situation?
I reckon there's a screen behind Scott. So she's looking like she's looking at Scott, but she's actually seeing what the outside rail's doing there at Ascot in day one. Whether or not she wants to be on the inside of the outside rail.
Do you think she says, sorry, Scott, I've just got to go to the toilet, I'll be back? She just disappears, or I've just got to go get something, and you sort of just quietly goes into another room and just watches the race and comes back. Yep, back.
Yeah, no, it came forth. Sorry, Scotty. Sorry, just needed to go to the toilet. I don't know. I reckon there'd be a screen somewhere. I've heard she loves racing.com, and she loves the simulcast with RSN 927. She loves that. She tunes in on the app.
She goes to bed with the app.
She downloaded the app last week, I heard.
Yeah.
Her match. And now she's got a piece of the action. And she's a big breakfast. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if she rang in for the quiz. I wouldn't be surprised if that
quiz
was the
case. Gee, the quiz is good.
It what?
The quiz is really good today.
Have you put some effort in?
It's a really good quiz. No audio. It's 5 good, solid questions.
Righto.
There is.
No, I don't...
The last question's a ripper.
I don't dispute that. The last question's a ripper. If you were... This is a question without notice. If you had a sawn-off 22 caliber long-arm rifle and you took a few shots at some men in a car park at the Heritage Shopping Centre in Pakenham, and that was a couple of months ago, and you got away with it, and then the police released the CCTV footage because they couldn't find this bandit. And your mum saw that it was you. Would she dob you in?
Gee, that's a good question. Very good question. I think she'd be disappointed.
Do you reckon she'd dob you in? I need to know this.
No, good question.
I need to know.
I don't know.
I ask you because...
She'll text in.
I ask you because, page 3 of the paper today, Broden Croon did what I've alleged that you may have done at some stage. Took the 22 and started shooting at people. I don't know why. I'm still trying to work out why. At the Heritage Shopping Centre in Pakenham. They didn't catch him. He shot at two men. And it didn't scare them. They chased him and he ran away. So they couldn't find this dude. So recently the police released the footage. And Broden's mum identified that it was him and dobbed him in.
Right. What would your mum do?
Well, that's why I asked you, because I saw this story this morning. I thought, what would my mum do? I think what she said probably nails it. She'd be very disappointed. There's no doubt about that.
She'd certainly make me go and apologise.
I don't know if she'd dob me in. I reckon Mrs. Croon's done a great service to the community by doing that. He was sentenced in the county court to 2 years and 10 months in jail with a non-parole period of 2 years. So she's cost him two. Like, it's a big decision for Mrs. Croon to do that.
Mm. Head high contact, throw you down to two with an early plea.
I don't think there's too much early pleading going on from our man. Mm. I thought, what would my mother do? I thought, well, there's only one person to ask about mothers.
Another interesting thing. I know this is a sports show, but I was reading an article last night about a... Did you read this story about the woman who was found guilty of murdering her husband? And she opened up in jail to what she thought was an inmate, was actually an undercover police person who then was able to get enough evidence to be able to, you know, that went as part of the thing in court.
Right.
But she poisoned her husband with I suppose it's not allegedly now because it happened. She was found guilty of it. She poisoned her husband. She gave him a milkshake with some bad things in it. In a Nutribullet type setup. But they found the container in the dishwasher. But she hadn't put the dishwasher on.
Oh, she ran out of tabs. She ran out of tabs and hadn't been down to Aldi to get the new box of tabs. And oh, what a disaster. Goodness me. No, that's unfortunate. You've got to put the dishwasher on every night. Every night before you go to bed. Dishwasher goes on with the tabs.
Yeah.
But the magic tabs these days, quite remarkable.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Leave the glasses sparkling.
Even with the... What happens to the plastic with those tablets? Well,
no, it's just like
they just seem to melt.
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. It's exactly what it does. Exactly what it does. Put the guns away, Dale, off the SMS. Juppy says, my mother couldn't get on the phone quick enough. no way your mother wouldn't dob you in. She'd play dumb. I'm not sure if that's for you or for me, but... or is just a general your mother, which probably sounds wrong, doesn't it? That's a bit of feedback coming through via the SMS. Keep it coming, 0416 90 50 52 via the SMS machine through the morning. Or give us a call, 1300 652 927.
You mentioned before that Harry Mackay is going to join us on the program, which is awesome. It's great to catch up with Harry at any time, but particularly considering he's just put pen to paper on a new 2-year deal, which will, as you said yesterday, bring him up to free agency.
Yep.
So no long-term deal necessarily for Harry. We keep hearing that Patrick Cripps has signed. We keep hearing behind the scenes that it's done.
Yep.
You know, Freo, no chance. West Coast, no chance. He's not going home. It's done. But still no announcement. Yet we get the Harry Mackay announcement. I think that's quite interesting.
Well, you know what they're like these days, footy clubs, with the drip feed of positive information. They don't want to overdo the positivity too early. Although, if you're a Carlton at the moment, you try and get as much out there as you could.
Well, I think this is a great timing for Carlton to have this news to announce.
So you know what they're like. They stagger and they stage their information releases. So you wouldn't put Harry and Patrick together too closely. You need to drag that out. Maximum exposure, maximum hype for the fans. Do all that sort of stuff. You communications people know this stuff. I don't know it very well, but that's seemingly what they do. So I wouldn't be surprised. My understanding is that deal's done.
Mm. So I have the same understanding.
There'll be an announcement sooner rather than later. But when that is, I don't know. Maybe it's on the Cripps camp as to when they want to release that. Not sure. Not sure. We'll see how we go. Well, ask Sherelle after 7 what her mum would do. At Bermorm, Ollie, whether or not she'd have the phone to the ear real quick. I reckon John would be upset if Sherelle was shooting .22 cutoffs. I reckon he'd be upset about that. Hey, let's get to the world-famous five-question Vlado Steakhouse quiz. Righto. Give us a call.
You know what I'm going to do?
What are you going to do? 1-300-652-927.
If someone can run the board...
No one will ever run the board. It's never been done.
With this quiz, I'm going to give away two Vlado's vouchers.
We've got two books to give away too.
So $440 thereabouts, maybe $420 worth of Vlado's vouchers. To give away
that?
If someone can run the board.
Do you have the authority to do that?
No, but let's go. Let's go with it.
1-300-652-927. It's the number to call. No one has ever run the board unassisted. That's what we know. We've been doing this for a long time now. Yep. No one has ever run the board. So it's worthwhile having a crack. Our man at the back has got a couple of extra special gifts too. So you'll give away 2x210s
yep.
at Vlado's. Melbourne's own world-renowned steakhouse, a family business for 960 years. And we will throw in some extra bonus.
So I'm not sure that whether that means you can take four people to Vlado's or you've got to go twice with just two. I'm not sure. But we'll put two vouchers up for grabs because I'm confident that no one can get this down the line. And I don't think you could either.
You don't think I could do it?
No. No, I don't. No, touch and go. Touch and go. Touch and go. And I agree with the text coming here. I'm not sure either that Dennis isn't one of the could-have-been champion Tony's talkback callers.
What do you mean?
I think there's a chance he might be sometimes.
Does he call the could-have-beens?
Yeah, I think he might.
Could-have-beens are an institution. I'd be calling them too if I was listening to the wireless a little bit. Now, we're going to throw in as well. Now, that this is clearly a joke from our man. Surely it's a joke. He's given me the ultimate Aussie sports trivia book as well, 2016. So 5 years ago, he's given me this book to give away to our person who runs the board. And then, Joey, he's taken the mickey now. He's thrown in the every game ever played VFL AFL results 1897 and 1995 Bible. Includes the 1995 season. Stops there. So there's 25 years you missed out on. Don't even think about pretending to give that to one of our listeners, Joey. It's disrespect. Disrespect our listeners. You're a disgrace.
All right. Ben from Mooney Ponds is going to be the person that's going to get the opportunity to run the board, or at least the first person to run the board with a double situation.
No one's ever done it
this morning.
No one's ever done it.
Ben, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Whitey.
Are you ready? Are you excited about this opportunity?
I'm not confident with the way you're selling it, but I'll give it a crack.
All right. Question number one.
Is it an easy one? First one? Will you get him rolling?
A little bit harder. You've got to give them some confidence early. Throw a few half volleys outside off stump.
Okay.
Who kicked the ball to Josh Kennedy that resulted in the winning goal for West Coast against Richmond on Sunday night?
Liam Ryan.
There you go. So okay. Ben's the one. So
Ben's
everyone
the
else,
one.
You can only get one.
There's only one on offer.
All right, Ben. Question number two. Who was the Danish football star and Inter Milan football star who collapsed on the pitch in the Euro Championship clash against Finland over the weekend?
Oh, God. Eriksen?
Yeah, I'm going to give that. Christian Eriksen?
When there's two on the line, you're
no,
very generous. He's okay,
that.
By the way. Yep. He's sent some messages out in the last 24 hours. He's feeling better.
Yep.
So that's great news for Christian and his family and his teammates.
All right, Ben, are you a racing fan?
It's going to be my week. Week two.
Okay, well, you never know. You never know. In 2009, a Western Australian sprinter trained by Dan Morton and ridden by Stephen Arnold won the famous King's Stand at Royal Ascot. Of course, the King's Stand was last night at Royal Ascot. Who was the horse? 2009 King's Stand winner.
What was the question?
That's disrespectful, Daniel.
I wasn't listening.
Yeah, no. Sorry.
Oh, Benny.
Bad luck, Ben. Let's go to Michael from Essendon. Michael, good morning.
G'day.
Okay, Michael, do you like your racing?
Partial to it.
Good. In 2009, a Western Australian sprinter trained by Dan Morton and ridden by Stephen Arnold won the famous King's Stand at Royal Ascot. What was the horse's name?
From memory, it was Scenic Blast.
Very good, Michael.
I'm still
good
running
answer.
The board here. I'm still running the board.
Good answer, Michael. Well done.
I'm alive in the quaddy.
I thought that might take a few to get, but you've done well. Which Australian swimmer broke the world record in the 100 metres backstroke during the current Olympic trials in Adelaide?
Was it Titmus?
No, it wasn't. Titmus is a freestyle. Bad luck, Michael. Let's go to Darren from Yarrawonga. Darren, good morning.
Yeah, g'day, Whitey.
What's the weather like up at Yarrawonga today? I'm expecting it to be beautiful. Always is.
It's wet.
It's wet?
Very wet.
Have we got some sort of millage update?
No, I'm just going to admit, I don't know how much, but it's wet.
Right, okay.
That's the official term.
Which Australian swimmer broke the world record in the 100-metre backstroke during the current Olympic trials in Adelaide?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it. I just can't remember his name. No, I don't know.
Oh, bad luck, Darren. Bad luck, Ian from Pakenham. Good morning, Ian.
G'day, how you going?
Good. Who's the swimmer?
Is this the backstroke question?
Backstroke? The backstroke question. Who broke the world record?
Yeah, the girl's name, her last name's McEwen.
Yeah, I'm going to give that. To be consistent, I've got to give
well,
that.
Well, you need to give
because
it.
Because I gave Erickson. Kaylee McEwen won the backstroke.
I'm disappointed.
In world record time.
It's been an interesting quiz.
It's been terrific.
Well, I think you've been
now
very
the piece de resistance. Ian.
I'm four from four.
Who am I? I coached the Melbourne Tigers to two NBL championships between 2006 and 2008 after being a player for the Tigers many years earlier.
Just give me the vouchers.
One of those guys.
Come on, this is for the voucher, Ian.
What? One of those guys.
It'd be too easy if it was Gazy, wouldn't it? Is it Copeland or the other
one? No, Ian, bad luck.
Oh, dear.
Tim from Ascot Vale. Good morning, Tim.
Hello, boys. What a question thing I go for the Tigers. Al Westover.
Oh, it is. Just like that, Tim from Ascot Vale gets it.
Always nice to talk some hockey. Always nice to talk some Olympics around here in the Breakfast Club. And when you're Eddie Ockenden, you're going to be there for the fourth time, if you don't mind. Hobart's finest is co-captain of the Kookaburras, getting ready for a big campaign. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. G'day, Eddie.
G'day, good morning.
Great to have you with us, mate. Four times you'll get yourself to an Olympic Games. When you started all those years ago, did you ever think this was a possibility?
Oh, no, I don't. No, you definitely don't. I mean, growing up playing hockey, one of the main things I really loved about hockey and the allure was, like, the Olympics, watching it as a kid. You know, you want to go there, and you're just trying to get in the team, you're trying to make your first Olympics, which is super exciting, and then I think you just sort of roll from there. But I think your first is your most exciting. I was thinking about the other day, yesterday we had the announcement with all the guys making their first Olympics, and I think the most exciting time is that one, which is really cool to see for those guys.
Was there ever a situation or a thought for you when 2020 was cancelled that, that was going to be my window, probably I won't get back there now, 12 months time, who knows what happens for 2021? Did you get to that stage in your mind, or was it always a driving ambition to try and qualify again?
Yeah, I didn't really think like that, but I think realistically it's always a chance that your performance could drop off, or that you don't have the consistent training that we're used to doing. And so I think there was probably a worry there, but it wasn't really a thought of mine that I wouldn't keep trying to do it, because I was still enjoying it. Had a lot of downtime sort of March last year for a few months. That was just good to have a break, like when we first got the news of the postponement. And then when we got back together in Perth and reset towards the end of the year, it was... No, it was all really positive, and that allure of the Olympics was still there for all of us. So I was enjoying training, and I was liking the challenge of competing for a spot.
Eddie, how different is the team going to be this year to what it would have been had you had the Olympics last year?
I don't think too different, but definitely a few differences. Like the break, that postponement, it could help a few players. If they weren't quite there in their development, or if they weren't performing where they wanted to in the build up. But then there's guys at the other end where you're planning for life after, and you might be thinking about retirement, or you've set plans in place for your life. So those are two end of the spectrums, I think. So, yeah, I think a little bit of different, but our squad was pretty similar over those 2 years.
Do you think you're, and I know this is a hard question to answer, but do you think you're a better chance this year than what you would be if there was an Olympics last year with the makeup of your team and the development of the team in the last 12 or so months?
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's obviously a hard one to answer, but if we think about it, then we do have a developing team and a lot of young guys have been improving a lot across our squad, which is really cool to see. But you have that part of it where we've been able to train consistently together. Luckily, we've been in Perth and we've been able to train sort of no worries through the whole time. So that consistency and that quality of our training has been really good to develop some guys, and they've really improved, and we've made huge strides as a team with our sort of skills and our tactics and what we want to do. But if you look at it the other way, that we haven't had that consistent international competition that we're used to having, so it's been a big break. So that's one of the challenges that we'll have to overcome is getting that match practice and sort of getting past that without having heaps of international games under our belt.
It's Wednesday, and around these parts, what we do is we track down the world's greatest ever netball and get them to be a part of our program on The Breakfast Club. And she's back again today, and she's real life, 3D person, not just 2D on the screen. Sharon McMahon, welcome to you.
Good morning. Thank you. Lovely.
You're back.
To be back in Melbourne.
Why are you here?
To be back.
What are you doing, woman?
Well, I have family commitments that I need to get back for.
Real Seb Ross areas from Sharon.
Exactly. Exactly. I know. Let's open that can of worms. So, is that me
what
making...
What is that? What are you doing?
Making something rattle. I'm sorry. I'm nervous to be back in the studio. but I am back. I had to leave very quickly, as I think I was told you over the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
It was almost for 3 weeks in the end. And so, yes, I needed to get back for that. We have a bye coming up for the Melbourne Vixens this weekend. So the rest of the team is continuing to stay up in Queensland to ensure that they're able to play the game over in Perth in 2 weeks' time. To make sure that the borders are not going to lock us out of there. So, but yes, I've needed to get home to the children. Actually, probably more to Breck than the children. But
who was happier to see you when you walked through the doors? The children?
Well,
or the husband?
Probably Breck. Although I arrived, I'd told Breck, you know, I'm arriving at this time, and you know, I'll see you then. And I walked into the house, and I'm like, hello. Like deathly silence, and I'm like, oh, they're playing a game of hide and seek, and so I'm looking through the house, and I rang Breck, and I'm like, hello, and he's like, hi, you nearly back. I'm like, I'm at home, and he's like, oh, we're down at the park, and I'm like, oh, how's that for a welcoming?
Welcome back. Welcome back. Gee, we really missed you, Mum. We knew
we've
coming
got
back.
Some other things on actually, but anyway, so it wasn't the excited welcome home that I was expecting.
Right. Right.
But anyway, it was all good.
Were you sitting there pondering the performance of your team? Another loss on the weekend, Sherelle, to the Mighty Magpies too, which is disappointing.
Mm.
The crosstown rivals who we never lose to, we got smacked by. Smacked, Sherelle.
Are you in crisis or not yet?
I don't know that I would use that term, Whitey. Maybe others might.
You're a nasty man.
We've won one in one game for this season. We're halfway through now. So it's obviously not where we wanted to be.
No.
But I don't know whether you'd say, we wouldn't say crisis, but we've got a lot of work to do. As you say, losing to the Magpies is... not great. Losing to anyone isn't great, but we always want to get yourself up for that crosstown match. And you're right, they were way too good for us on the weekend.
Who did we beat? Did we beat the Thunder? No, the Firebirds?
The Firebirds.
Firebirds,
yeah.
Right,
but
okay.
And that was, I know we spoke about that. We were up in Queensland. That was the first week of our little trip away, and that was when our new recruit, Rani Sampson, shot the goal. Just after the buzzer, actually, to get us that win. So it was a tight one, but we got over the line for that one. So a couple of weeks now to reset in a way to try and, you know, give the second half of the season a shake. That we're, the next trip that we've got is over to Perth to play against Fever.
Ooh,
who
that's not ideal.
The unbeaten
Fever, who currently sits second on the ladder. They would obviously normally be top, but they are... dealing with some salary cap breach infringements, which means that they lost 12 points, but it doesn't seem to have affected them too much when you don't lose a game.
No, they're sitting second on the table, as you say, behind the Lightning, who are 5-2. The Fever are 7-0, but with a 12-point deficit at the start, they're sitting in second.
Mm.
Do they still have the same squad that was salary cap breaching?
Largely, yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. The look on your face.
You don't have to say anything more.
Yeah, that's largely. To be honest, I'm not 100% sure of, because it was a few years ago that that these breaches happened. So there have been a few changes since then. I think Natalie Medhurst, I think, was one of them.
The accountant was another. Not there anymore.
The accountant is looking for other industry at the moment. Second set of books sort of stuff.
Yeah, so I would have to look at that. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's pretty similar.
Right. Well, that's going to be a setback. So we've heard through the last couple of weeks in the AFL, Sherelle, the mid-season bye and that sort of stuff. We've got the Blues going through a review. We spoke to David Noble last week, the coach of the Kangas, and they've had their mid-season sort of assessment and review and look back on what's worked and what hasn't. Do you do a similar thing? You got the bye this week, you said. Do you do a similar thing from a Vixens perspective and go through the SWOT analysis of what's going on at the Vixens?
Yeah, we'll do something similar to that. It won't be quite like what the Blues are doing.
No, that's a bit more heated.
A little bit more in depth. But certainly at this point, we'll make sure we're checking in with all the players, absolutely having lots of conversations around the first half of the season and what has worked and what we can do better. So obviously there'll be a bit more of a focus on one side of that given the start of the season that we've had.
Mm. Who's been a standout? Who's blossomed this year? No, there hasn't been too much sort of awesomeness going through, clearly, from the record. But some players must have developed. You've got some young players in there. Have they developed?
Yeah, we have got some young players. Liz Watson is out with that foot injury, so it's allowed Hannah Mundy, who is the daughter of Shelley O'Donnell, a netballing legend, to step into that role. So she's absolutely gaining experience and having some really good impact on the game. The other one is probably Katie Ann Dehaney, who's one of our defenders from Jamaica. And another injury we've had is to another Diamonds player in Emily Mannix. The last 3 weeks she's sat out with a hand injury. So that has allowed Katie Ann to really step up. So one player I've really enjoyed watching is Marwi Kamwenda, who a lot of people would know if they've watched much netball. She's a real superstar of our sport, and she, for many years, has played with Tegan Phillip and Caitlin Thwaites and had some real experience around her. So, you know, she's just working through being able to step up without that support around her too in terms of that experience. So she's been doing really well too.
Who's the best player in the competition? Who's the Dustin Martin of Super Netball?
Well, it'd be Janelle Fowler.
Yeah.
Who is not a midfielder, mid-quarter, like Dustin Martin in terms of ball use, but she's the goal shooter for West Coast Fever and regularly shooting at least 50 goals for her team. So she's very difficult to stop.
So do we need to go into the old Cobra Kai mode to defeat her? Sweep the leg?
Oh, probably.
We need to sweep the leg, I think. She's too good.
Well, I mean, she has been in the competition for a number of years now, and the team that she has been in has not managed to win the premiership as yet. So you would say that, no, the leg sweeping is not necessary to take down the Fever.
I don't know about that.
They are particularly dominant this season, though, obviously, with their 7-0. It's almost like the penalty of the three matches at the beginning of the year. I don't know, set them up and gave them a resolve that they wanted just to push through and give themselves the best chance. So that's what they've done. So we've got any team coming up against them, got a lot of work to do to stop the ball getting to her. Because once it gets to her, I wouldn't say it's impossible to stop, but it's really tough to stop. So you got to do the work out the front before it gets to her.
That's why you got to sweep the leg, take her out, do what you got to do. Are you golfing at the moment? Any golf?
No golfing at the moment.
I saw your sister won the 27-hole event at Bemorme on the weekend.
Yes.
On the sand scrapes up there.
Played with Sir Frank.
I saw that Mr. she won Bemorme. That, and I thought of her. We've got Brad Kennedy on the line there. Brad's playing in the US Open this week at Torrey Pines.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if the 27 hole at Bemorma is ready, his preparation for Torrey Pines, but Brad might know. He joins us on the line. Brad, good morning.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. Anytime. Have you played sand scrapes before, just by the way?
I played once over in WA. I wasn't very good, actually.
No, it's not easy.
It's definitely an art. Yeah, you need some local knowledge to do that.
Yeah, so we're here. Now, you need some local knowledge at Torrey Pines too, they reckon. How many times have you played there? I know you just finished your practice round. How many times have you played there?
Well, I've just only had two practice rounds. I came straight from Japan last Monday and had a round on Sunday and, second round today. So still trying to get my head around what to do. And I think this week it's really going to be a key, just hitting fairways and then the way the greens are really small compared to what you normally play on a tour standard. So pin positions and iron control is going to be a key this week.
So when you're doing your practice rounds, so if you're coming in basically cold and seeing it for the first time and trying to work out how you're going to attack this, when you're walking in between shots, are you looking at landmarks? Are you looking at areas you want to land? Are you playing different shots from different areas to work out what you might need depending on what you take off the tee? How do you do it for our listeners at home? How do you go through this preparation phase?
Well, for me, it's just key to see what it does off the tee. So pretty much every practice round I'll just hit the driver off the tee and see where that leaves me, whether it's too much or there's bunkers that might get caught up. So it's just all about being aggressive, and then as the week changes and the breeze changes, you can sort of monitor your clubs off the tee from there. But it's just getting a really... But most of the time that I spend in a practice round is around the greens, really mapping out the greens, working out where to leave approach shots if the pin's going to be in certain positions, because the greens are, as I said, quite small, and the pins are going to be tucked behind bunkers, and so it's going to be really important just to, I think this week, just play centre of the green, and then there are going to be times where you're not even going to be able to go for the pin.
So, Brad, you've been a pro for nearly 30 years, and you've played in a couple of British Opens, but to play in a US Open for the first time at a famous golf course like Torrey Pines, when you turn up, is it a course that intimidates you?
No, I wouldn't say it intimidates me. Definitely, it's one of the most amazing courses I've ever played, right on the side of a cliff, and you've got hang gliders flying over the side of you on the third little par three down the hill, and yeah, it's just an amazing, amazing place. And I think it's a fair course this week. The fairways are probably the width that I'm used to in Japan. But it's all about, again, hitting enough fairways that you can really control yourself into the greens. And the rough is, even though it doesn't look like there's going to be much on TV with the rye grass and the cotillia grass, the ball just goes straight to the bottom. And if you miss the fairway, it's a wedge out.
Yeah, it's a fascinating golf course. So you've had the opportunity to play in some pretty big tournaments recently because of your performances on the Australasian Tour. Just, I'd love you to share with our listeners what it's like turning up to a US Open where it's the who's who on the practice fairway, on the putting green, just sort of walking the course. Again, for someone with your sort of experience, is that daunting or does it feel normal? What's it like?
Oh, it's definitely a bigger jump coming onto the US, the PGA Tour, the couple of rounds that I've had so far in October and February this year. It's definitely a different atmosphere, and fortunate we've got, I think, 10,000 people a day, which is only 20% of the crowds expected during a normal US Open this week. And I think it's just really nice to be able to test yourself on the same golf course that the best of the best are playing. And you don't always get that chance when you're playing on other tours. So you try and put that aside as well and really concentrate on your game and how you need to prepare. But I've just noticed the different entourage around different people. There's sort of the player and about 10 others following. So they've all got bag carriers and mentors and gym guys and putting guys. So yeah, it's a bit different than what I'm used to, just travelling on my own in Japan.
A little bit of a different setup. But what about the setup in terms of, you say you've been in Japan, you've been over to New Zealand, now travelling over to America. What's the difference in what you're able to do, what your preparation is given the circumstances in the world at the moment? Is that affecting what you're able to do in terms of your preparation?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I was in Japan for 9 weeks, which isn't a normal schedule for me. Normally, in that trip, I would have done 2 trips back and forward to break it up. So yeah, that was a really long stint first up. And the first 2 weeks of quarantine in Japan was tough. And trying to come out of quarantine and get ready for tournament golf is not being able to hit a golf ball for 2 weeks and being stuck in a room. It's quite difficult to get your brain switched on to competitive golf again, and it takes a few weeks, but then once you sort of find that rhythm, and it has been difficult in Japan this year, travelling as, I guess, not as free as we have in the past, and really being more conscious of what you can and can't do, and then fortunately not having to quarantine coming into America, but still, it is different to what it has been in the past, and I'm going to have to stay here for another 3 weeks after the US Open to go to the British Open purely because I just can't come back to Australia. But it definitely does take its toll, and I'm not going to get back to Australia till the end of August, so it'll be a 5-month stretch away from my wife and kids, which is something I've never ever done in my career. So it's definitely made a massive impact on things, but circumstances are what they are, and fortunate to get a couple of opportunities, so I've just got to try and ride this out as best I can.
Great to be able to chat to Harry Mackay, the big forward from the Blues, who yesterday put pen to paper, probably was before that actually, but it was announced yesterday, a 2-year extension to his contract, making a lot of Carlton supporters very, very happy, and I assume him as well. He joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, H.
Hey, Harp, how you doing, mate?
I'm going very well, mate. Is it nice to have that news out there now so you can move on?
Yeah, it's a bit of a relief to a degree, Harp. It all happened pretty quickly in the end, but for it to be official and so everybody knows now, it's nice to be able to focus on the back half of the year and get back and do some work.
How did you cope with it? Clearly it didn't affect your footy too much, but all the discussion around your future and what would happen, and then there was the Ben conversation as well, that would they go together, the boys, and I heard you talk about that yesterday, and that was never going to happen. But how did you cope with it, with all the speculation around your future?
I thought I dealt with it pretty well, to be honest. I didn't actually think about it much at all until someone brought it up or made sure I do an article or something. But, I was pretty keen from the start to really focus on my football. I was pretty locked in and was trying to put my best foot forward there. And then whenever there was an opportunity to sit down and work something out, would do that. But, I thought a lot of it was just white noise in the background and kind of had a bit of a laugh about some of them, half, especially playing with Ben. I don't think that would happen. But, I thought it wasn't too bad, yeah.
No, not too bad. Leading the Coleman medal race, 38 goals at the moment, Harry. But I do need to bring up the fact that you're 10th in the league for accuracy on your goal kicking.
Oh, I know that's very just, early.
That
very
was early. Sorry. Should I have gone with something more positive first? I'm not sure. Actually, I'm regretting my decision. But what I am wondering, how much is that something you think about? Obviously, the accuracy is something you always want to work on. But how much do you put into improving that stat?
Yeah, it's for me as a forward, it's something I work on a lot, especially probably over the last 12 months, the last kind of couple of years, I've had a lot of shots on goal and I've missed quite a lot. So it's something I've put a lot of time and effort into. In terms of the actual percentage or where you sit on the league, I don't worry about that too much. But I do break down what side I'm more accurate from, what side needs a bit more work, etc. But day to day, I do a fair bit of goal kicking and I do like quite a bit of the mental side of it as well. So it's something I put a lot of time into. I think the reality is you're going to miss some goals and I've got my head around that, but obviously we don't want to miss any. But it's something we can keep chipping away at and seen improvement over the last 12 months, so hopefully in the next 12 months can see some more improvement.
Well, I was going to ask about the strategy behind it, because I'm sure a lot of people listening would be wanting to improve their accuracy in the sport that they play. One of the things that you do is, instead of the straight shot at goal, you do the snap over the shoulder occasionally. What are the things that you do to break it down? Have you got a really strong technique? Are there words that you use to talk to yourself? What is it for you that you feel helps to improve that?
Yeah, there's a couple of different elements. I think I look at it kind of, I reckon there's a mental side of it, and you spoke about some trigger words, and even just, for me, allowing myself to miss. So you go into, I used to go into games thinking, I'm going to kick perfectly today. If I don't, then it's a fail. But just giving myself that kind of freedom to fail to a degree,
yeah.
I think it's helped a lot. But then the technique side of things, I've worked out that, for me, it's just a more comfortable and accurate kick for that kind of that snap from the, I guess, the right pocket. And then just having something that, one or two things that you know you need to nail every time, whether it be ball drop, momentum, and then just having a pretty set routine that you can replicate time and time again. Yeah.
That's fascinating. Fascinating, Harry. Just on the decision to stay, you said that you didn't sort of put too much time into it. You always wanted to stay. For Carlton fans out there, why did you want to stay? What do you see that makes you excited?
Yeah, I think we've obviously been well publicised that we're not exactly where we want to be at the moment, but I think if you look at our list, the demographic of that, I think we're in a pretty strong space. I spoke about it yesterday, but I feel like we've got a lot of good people in good roles at the club, whether it be Kane Little as CEO, Brad Lloyd, head of football. I love how Teague goes about it as coach, Jack Russell in the high-performance role. So I think if you look at that, the backbone and the foundation of the club's in a really good spot. I think, obviously, the external review we've talked about, but if that can help just work out one or two little things, I feel like that'll help us springboard in the back half of the year, but the foundation and the backbone of the club's in a really good spot, I feel.
Do you think there needs to be dramatic change from this review, or do you think it's, as you said, just little bits and pieces that it's there, it just needs to be realised?
Yeah, I'd lean towards the second there. I think, as I said, I feel like we're doing a lot of things right, and even at stages this year in games, I think we've played three quarters, and it's just that kind of 20-minute lapse that's been killing us, so I would be highly doubtful that they would. I don't want to tell them how they do their job, but I don't think that they're going to come in and say we need to change everything. I think it'll just be a few little tweaks here and there, maybe a few adjustments, and that'll help us a lot.
And did you feel? Do you feel that there is significance? And did you feel the pressure of the significance of you signing? Because I think it does send a message that, well, you know, you could have gone pretty much wherever you wanted. That if you're happy to stay, that's a big sign of confidence, a vote of confidence in what Carlton is doing at the moment.
Yeah, I guess in reality and externally, that's the case. I think personally, you still think, oh, why does everyone make such a big deal of it? It's just me. I'm not a rock star. But, I think for fans and even people at the club, I think it's just a good news story in a time that hasn't been great for the club in terms of the what's been said around the place. But I think, I guess it's a show of faith. And as I said, I think I said yesterday, I wouldn't have re-signed if I wasn't 100% committed and faith that we could get out of the place we are in at the moment. So I guess it's a good thing.
Coming off a bye over the weekend, Harry, what did you get up to?
Well, sure. I had concussion on. On Sunday.
Yes.
So
I was actually going to ask you about that, but I felt like that might have thrown you again, like my first question. So I wanted to go on down a positive.
No, that's all good. So I didn't do a lot, to be honest.
Right.
I kind of just put the feet up for the first few days, and we're in lockdown in Melbourne, so I couldn't do a lot. But actually, did a bit of spring cleaning around the house. I was away for 2 weeks. I'm a housemate. It was pretty messy when I got back. So
I know
I
the feeling.
Do a bit of cleaning, but I was pretty low key.
Yeah, right. What about that concussion, Harry? Because obviously that was something that happened early in the game the weekend before. How are you feeling? Is that something that really did affect you and you felt the effects of that? Or did you feel pretty confident that that was going to be only kind of a short-term thing?
I'm feeling pretty good now, yeah. It was scary for a couple of days, to be honest. That was the first one I've really had. I think I had one when I was 14 or 15. But, yeah, it was just to not be yourself and it was a little bit daunting, but I've pulled up really well and really scary. But yeah, even after just having one, you can see how much of a serious issue it is and how scary it would be for guys that have had repeat one. So all the work and all the protection at the moment around the concussion and the head knock, I think, 100% warranted. So hopefully they can keep on investing in it.
Did you get any feedback from Ben after you gave him a bit of a drive-by yesterday?
No, I haven't spoken to him. I doubt he probably hasn't heard it. I don't think it was too much of a drive-by.
It was rock solid feedback, I thought.
Yeah, no, I'll probably see him later on this week maybe, but or I'll get a text today saying, just shut up or something. So I'm looking forward to the response.
We're heading to the Ricoh Centre at Waverley, where the Hawks are probably getting ready for another big game this Sunday against Essendon. And at UTAS Stadium in Launceston as well. That's right, Launceston, not the MCG, a move. I wonder what Tom Mitchell thinks about that, who's our champ from the Hawks on the Inner Sanctum. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me again.
Nice to have you with us. Now, the MCG is a bit different to UTAS Stadium, as you well know. Essendon down there is going to be a very different encounter. How are you feeling about all that?
Yeah, I suppose that's it's a summary of where things are at with COVID. I guess you just sort of have to roll with the punches. And yeah, typically Hawthorn and Essendon have always played at the G, but it will be a little bit different in Tassie. But I think it's a promising sign that we can get fans along down in Tassie. So I think everyone's pretty happy about that.
What about, because I'm starting to get jack of this whole lockdown thing and the restrictions and all that sort of stuff. And I know it's the world we live in, but from a game, from a professional football perspective, are you had enough of having to work on the fly and have things change all the time and get your head around that? Because athletes more often than are pretty much creatures of habit and routine.
Yeah, I guess so. In a way, sometimes when things are very last minute, you just have to adapt. But I don't think we're any different to anyone else, really. There's always things seem to be popping up. So I think we've been able to adapt quite well. And just whatever comes your way, you just got to deal with it.
Well, that's on Sunday against the Bombers down there at Tasmania. What about the weekend's performance against the Swans? I mean, that was the Hawks of old. Tom, where'd that come from?
Yeah, no, good question. We've probably been waiting for that sort of performance all year, really. And, to show four quarters of tough footy was, the way we want to play. So hopefully the second half of the year we can see some more of that consistently.
Well, it was a huge win up in Sydney. What was that like? Because it's obviously been a bit of a tough year for Hawthorn, as an understatement. The three wins only, that was a third one you've got. What was it about the performance that enabled you to get over the line against the Sydney?
I think the bye did enable us to reset and reflect on what had and hadn't worked in the first part of the season. And we sort of just had a few real basic, focus points. Really stripping the game back, to its simple form and just to execute on those things. So, we sort of came to play from the start and, we were able to carry that performance out throughout the whole game, which was pleasing.
Well, tell me about the performance of one of your mid-season draftees, Jai Newcombe. He'd only been drafted just over a week before that game, came out with 14 tackles. It's the best of any rookie that we've ever seen at AFL level. What was that like to see up close?
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. I'd actually never seen Jai play before.
Oh, right. Wow.
Yeah, it was a crazy week. You know, like you said, he wasn't even on the list. And then they've just thrown him in the deep end straight into AFL footy.
Yeah.
Seen a few highlights and things like that and probably done, two training sessions with him. And then I was like, yeah, this kid's all right. He has a go and he tackles hard. And, for a 19-year-old, it's bloody impressive. So can't wait to see what he can do for not only the rest of this year, but in his career.
14 tackles, that would be exhausting, wouldn't it? Is that a tiring thing to do? What's your best ever, Tom? You got up around 14?
I don't know if I've had 14 before, so I couldn't tell you if it's tiring.
Well, as Kevin Bartlett says in this conversation all the time, Sherelle and Tom, there's no point tackling when they've got the ball.
No.
Tom's often got the ball.
Yeah, that is very true. Very true.
That's right. Hey, Tom, I've been dying to talk to you because of what happened on Friday night, because you could tell after 5 minutes that the purpose was there, the intensity was there, and then we hear about boxing sessions and all sorts of things. What the hell happened in the build-up to actually see this sort of performance? Because it was so different to the game previous against the Suns at the same venue.
Yeah, it was only a few weeks earlier where we were quite the opposite sort of team. So I think it was it was a bit of a mindset shift, but also the way, you know, we decided to play and the way we were defending as a team, and just, you know, the basic things like sort of trying to be tough around the footy. Yeah, they were the real simple things we tried to do, and we sort of had energy to defend just because of the way we did that. So that was helpful.
Did you feel that straight away that... Because I must confess, watching it on the television after 5 minutes, I thought, oh, God, you're in this game big time. It just felt different. What was it like playing it?
Yeah, it felt like that playing as well. And, yeah, I think once you do get a few goals, confidence builds, and then you can sort of get momentum and everyone sort of jumps on board. So I guess the challenge is that when the momentum goes against you, having enough players to push back. But, you know, in this instance, it was really good that everyone was on board and we just kept playing.
And what about you personally? Because you play like an animal at times on Friday night. That contested brand was back. I mean, you've been getting plenty of the footy this year, but it did seem that you were even yourself playing with a bit of additional purpose. Now, I might be being unfair there, but it did feel different watching you play.
Yeah, I was probably no different to any other player on the list, really. A bit of reflecting as to what we could do better, both individually as a team. You know, put plenty of work in over the bye week, had a few days to sort of switch off, but then, you know, recognise some areas and improvement areas to try and make an impact for the team. So I think a number of our players did that, which was really good.
Yeah, well, it was great to watch, I must admit, from a Hawthorn perspective. By the way, I've done some numbers. Round 11, 2016, you had 14 tackles.
Ooh.
When you're a Swan playing the Gold Coast Suns, and you've had 13 three times as well. So you've been around the mark there, Tommy.
Yeah, I might have cut myself a bit short, but no, don't reckon I've done it on debut, so I was pretty impressed with the guy.
No, you certainly didn't do it on debut. Why do you mention the boxing sessions? Has there been a reassessment of how much we'll be doing, considering what's happened to Mitch Lewis and the conversation on the back of that?
Well, I think every club trains, you know, physically in some capacity, whether it be on the track or off the track. Obviously, physicality is a part of footy.
Yep.
You can't avoid it. You need to train it in some way to, you know, bring it on game day. It's not one of those things you can just switch on and off. So, yeah, we've explored different ways to try and get that out of our playing group. And sometimes things work, sometimes things don't. But I think it is important, you know, to try and find what works for each team because it's such a big part of the game.
It was another great night at the Aussie Swim Trials in Adelaide. You can check it all out live, exclusive on Amazon Prime Video through to June 17. That's another couple of nights tonight and tomorrow. And a part of the call team is the best in the business, Nicole Livingston, who's back with us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning. I'm glad I get to speak to Shirazza as well.
Hi, Nick. Good morning, Shirazza. Morning. Great to chat.
Nice to talk to you about swimming.
Well, we're all about awesome people talking about awesome things, and that's what's happening at the moment, Nick and Adelaide. Last night we saw some more awesome action from the trials, and our man Cole Chalmers, who we spoke about last week in the build-up to the whole thing, put on a bit of a show for us.
Yeah, the big guns were out last night in the 100 freestyle. He did really well to go 48.5 last night. The US trials are running at the same time, so there's kind of this virtual pre-Olympic meet taking place. So they haven't raced their 100 freestyle yet, but we're comparing really well. In fact, a lot of the events were ahead of them. So, yeah, Kyle's 100 free, I think, would have sent a little message across to Caleb Dressel, who is the US favourite to take him on at the Olympic Games.
Right. So physically, I mean, you know how they look in preparation phase and tapering phase and then competition phase. Has he got some scope to improve?
Yeah, I actually don't think, and I haven't spoken to his coach, Pete Bishop, but looking at him, I actually don't think he's rested. I think he still did some hard work right up to, and he trains really hard for a sprinter. He doesn't just turn up and shower, he actually trains hard. So, yeah, I think he's actually got a taper left for the Olympic Games, so that's exciting.
And there has been some enormous times. Let's start first with the girls. Kaylee McEwen breaking that world record. Ariane Titmus getting very, very close. How are you seeing their form? These are really good indications for the Olympics, aren't they?
Yeah, and Kaylee's in that really nice phase where she's 19, she's invincible. Every time she jumps in the water, she does her best time, which now is the world record. So she'll just keep getting quicker and quicker. And Ariane's had an interrupted preparation with injury, and I think she was absolutely delighted with how she's raced here. She's just missed the world record in both the 200 and 400 freestyle, and looked really, really good. And then we saw the vision of Katie Ledecky, her arch rival, and she looked like she was swimming through wet cement. So she was a fair way slower than Ariane in the 400 freestyle. So, you know, she's probably also in hard work, Katie, but when she's in hard work, she still bangs out a sub 4 minute 400 free, and she just didn't do it. She went 4:01.
So looking at things as they stand at the moment, I know the event hasn't finished yet. Do we feel, or do you feel, where we need to be or where we should be, or is it still a little unclear?
Yeah, no, I feel like we are. 100 freestyle for women is on today, so we'll get an idea. The 200 free for women was really strong. The men's 200 free and 100 free was really strong. So thinking about the relay depth, there's a couple of events that we're a little soft in that we haven't got qualifiers through. The 100 breaststroke, we didn't get a qualifier through with the men, but they'll take Zach Stubblety Cook, the guy that's got the best name in the business.
What's his name?
Zach Stubblety Cook. He won the 200 breaststroke last night and almost broke the world record. He just missed it by a whisker.
Well, like gobbledygook, Stubblety Cook.
So they'll take him for the breaststroke. But otherwise, you know, we've done really well, particularly for not racing for 18 months at this top level, fully rested.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.